Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles. And you discovered the other day that we are ranked.
That is true.
The FeedSpot top 50 needlepoint blogs, we showed up at number 17.
That's right. Number 17 among needlepoint blogs, not among like all blogs.
Right.
But so, still.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take that in a heartbeat.
Yep. I agree.
So number 17. So there's a little badge that we can put on the website. So I'll be doing that. Yep. So that's good. Yay us.
So keep listening.
Yep. Yes.
Keep giving us feedback.
Yep. Listen, and they say that we're supposed to encourage people to subscribe to our website, to get information, and also on the FlossTube YouTube, subscribe there. Numbers are growing quite nicely. Facebook page is another place to like our page, but encourage that. It does help us to get recognized and seen, as the more people we get. So, and really appreciate all the people who have already, and it's a boatload of them.
Yes. Hello.
So, yep. Yeah. Just a brief thing. Everyone's stitching friend, Mary Corbett, announced the other day she had emergency surgery. Going to be okay. Just going to be out of commission for a short while. So keep Mary in your thoughts and prayers. I'm sure she'll be fine. She said she'd be fine, so we're gonna take that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep. Okay, so I finally got started on Sarah Brazier.
Yes, I saw you take your first four stitches.
Have you did, that's right. That? Yes. Yes, you did. Yep. The Anasazi song is still not done, but I decided to put it away and get started on the samplers. So at Sassy Jack's there last week, yep, I did. I put in the first stitches and making my way around the horn here. Using the Jacqueline technique of half crosses and then an X every 10th one.
Which I was very envious of because I can't use that method to mark my canvas because when I tried doing it, my border color and my canvas color are too close. So you just can't see it. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm trying different methods of marking sort of landmarks on the canvas. And I think my last one, I didn't grid it, but what I did was I stitched sort of around the border, sort of an up 10 stitches, under 10 stitches, up 10 stitches, kind of that thing.
Yeah.
So at least I have some sort of landmark. I think that's what I have to stick with.
Yeah. Yeah, that dark cloth causing some fits, I think.
It is, but you know what? When I stop, it's going to feel so good and everything else is going to be so easy.
Well, that was the first I had seen it and seen what and was able to see what you're doing. I hope you can hang in there. I know it's been an up and down pain, but I really think you have something going. I really do.
It's not a pain to stitch. What it is it's experimentation. So I don't know how these threads are going to look on this fabric. So I could do it on a doodle cloth, and sometimes I do. But really what I'm trying to do is stay true to the original design. That's absolute, right? Where there's a stitch, there will be a stitch.
Right.
But stay true to the intent of the color of the design. So if a vine is green, I'll choose a green. And with the DMC colors, you know, if you go from 501 to 503, they're all just, you know, variations on a color. So if I have to go a little bit darker so that it shows up better or a little bit lighter, that's kind of what I'm doing. So sometimes it means I have to start, you know, the vine in the color that's part of the kit because I kitted it all with DMC and then say, you know what, it's really not working for me. I need to brighten it up or I need to bring it down a little bit and then start it over. So there's a little bit of that. And then there's also, because I'm working with metallics blended in, there's a little bit of, okay, which metallic is going to work with this color and where does it fit? Because sometimes you want, you know, a big punch of shiny, and other places you want it to sort of fall back into the fabric a little bit. So a lot of it, that part isn't really giving me fits at all. That's more just kind of having fun with it and playing with it until I get the look that I'm going for. Yeah. So it's just slower than it would be for anybody else that's just doing the thing. And there are plenty of times when I wish I could just do the thing because it would be a lot faster. But even, you know, because things are so repetitive in the piece, this top corner will be really slow because, you know, it's figuring out the border. It's figuring out the border colors. It's figuring out the vine and then the leaves and the flowers. And once I have that, the rest of the border, which is a good chunk of the piece, that will fly because I know what those colors are going to be. Does that make sense? So once
Well, that's just it because, that whole border, that double-edged border with all those flowers, that is a bulk of it. And yeah, exactly. Once you get the colors and the threads sorted out, then you can just go. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then I had showed you what I had done with the chart was I had photocopied it in color with two pages. So the book is now in a sort of a binder, and every page I have two copies of the page, one that I can write notes on. And, you know, I showed you, you know, you can see I said, all right, I'm going to use this Krynek and this color and then cross that out. No, that didn't work. And then I'm going to use this. All right. That's what I'm sticking with. And then the second page is if it's easier for me to just cut out the page and just put the motif on the actual fabric so it's easier to see, just so I don't have to refer back to a chart that is on a different part of the stand.
Right.
Just to make it easier. So I just use a magnet or something to hold the little motif where I need to stitch. So I have that all. So that's all put together into one nice little book.
Yes.
So that's kind of how I'm working. So by the end of it, I'll have hopefully written down all the fabric, or not fabric, the colors and the thread choices that I made. So, well, and mostly because I forget. So what I don't want to do is to get halfway around and realize I forgot what I chose before and then be inconsistent. That would be bad.
Yes. Yes.
So well, I'm trying to be good.
I think you have something going there. I had to see it to really grasp it because I love the concept of if one of those little girls showed up today with all the threads we have, what would they choose? Well, obviously they'd choose the sparklies and the, you know, all the things, rather than just straight cotton or silk. And you're dead right in the concept. And then to see it start to come together, and it really is a neat look. I really, and on the dark background, it's just, I think it has potential to be really, really super. But I also have a little empathy there for what you're going through, just trying to sort it all out, because you do have to work pretty hard on it to make sure everything is going to make sense, I guess,
Yes, and because it's difficult to see. And when
there is that too, isn't there?
Yeah, right? I'm going to be blind. When we first started, I was going for... Here, this is going to be a really good rationalization, so pay attention. What I was going for was a very dark blue fabric, and that's sort of how I saw it in my head. And then all the light colors would just pop off the fabric that way. And I dyed this fabric a bunch of different times, and the best I could get was this sort of dark denim color. And I think now that that's happened and I've had some time to think about it, I think I like it better. Because even though I won't have the benefit of that sort of having a sampler pop off of a really dark background, I think that would have been a cool look. If we're going with this whole little girl idea, there's this whole trend in clothing now of embroidered everything. So you can see embroidered denim jackets everywhere. So it's not inconceivable that a little girl would embroider her jeans or her jacket. So it's exactly that color.
Yes.
And it's a tiny bit easier on my eyeballs.
that too.
So
yeah.
So
I think you got something going. I'm curious to see it unfold, and like you were talking about the satin stitch in the border there, you looked a little heavy, so you're going to go back because you said you were stitching it as if it was a surface embroiderer rather mm-hmm. than doing it where it's just one thread and one hole.
Right.
And so yeah, you said you were going to go back. The little section you did was just kind of too heavy, and I really think it was too heavy.
It was. So I ripped that all out. So I guess the lesson there is don't be afraid to rip things out because it's not that big of a deal. And it really was just that I didn't have the experience to know that it's okay for the satin stitch to feel like you could see the fabric through it. You know, yeah. To my eye, a satin stitch you shouldn't see any fabric through it at all. But then when I did that, it looked clunky, you know?
Right.
So I did it, and then I kind of sat with that for quite a while. And then I decided to rip it out.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a good move, and we'll see what the next round looks like. But yeah, it was mm-hmm. it was a little too much there. So I mean, it's a great idea, great concept. What little you have done, you can start to visualize what it's going to look like, and I think it's going to be neat. And also, just as a sheer learning experience, what threads will work and what won't yes. on that cloth, mm-hmm. on that thread count. I mean, there's a lot of things that will come out of this effort that will apply in future projects many yes. times over. And
it is forcing me to learn color.
Yes.
Because all of the fabric of the colors are all kind of mid-range in their tone.
Mm-hmm.
So to put them on a light fabric would be fine, or to put them on a very dark fabric would be fine. So now I'm putting them on a fabric that's pretty much the same tone. So the struggle here is now if you put a medium green on a medium blue, they all kind of blend into this mishmash that you can't really see and doesn't make any kind of impact. So how do you tell a story then? Well,
right.
do you make it darker? Do you make it lighter? Do you add a metallic that has a different quality to it? Like, what's the story you want to tell?
Right.
So sometimes with a vine, it's you turn it a little bit darker and a little bit browner. Sometimes if it's a leaf, you make it a little lighter and a little bit shinier. So, you know, I don't know the answer to most of these questions. I'm kind of winging it as I go, but it's forcing me to really think a lot about color values and, you know, light and dark and how they play together. I can't cheat with this because it really forces the issue of, you know, you have to choose the right ones because otherwise they just get lost.
Right. Well, and then you had the opposite with some of that blending filament in the satin stitch where the one section there was just too bright and shiny.
Right.
It stood out. So, yeah, you mm-hmm. got to tone that back. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, that's, yeah. It's going to pay off. It's going to pay off in a lot of ways. This is going to be a good exercise, no doubt.
We'll see. I think Nicola got the vapors. it's going to be different.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I think it's worth it. Yep. Every now and then, just go a little crazy. Nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it.
Yep.
That's fun.
Yeah, and then for those who didn't see our live presentation at Sassy Jack's, your San Francisco school, you're just outside the lines all over the place here. Your San Francisco, San Francisco School of Needlework and Design Challenge. Now that did arrive, so they have it.
Well, they did, and they've already posted it on their Facebook and. So if you go to the San Francisco Needlework and Design Facebook page, you can find the piece there.
Yep. Very cool. That's very cool. Yep. I have showed it to many, many, many. Yep. That's a good one. And this Sunday's guests will be Lucy Barter and Elise Sperber, who are the founders of the San Francisco School. So
mm-hmm.
A great conversation there. And then you were talking about, as you were getting to Weaverville, that for what, basically 2 days, you sat in a Jeep bouncing along and stitching to get that done to meet the deadline. I can't imagine what that was like to stitch in a Jeep.
Uncomfortable.
going down the expressway in a Jeep. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, I have a travel piece that I do, but it's it's a pillow, and it's from when I first started stitching. And if I miss it, you know, it's no big deal because it's all kind of freeform anyway. And I don't really care about it. And it's just something to keep my hands busy. But this kind of had to be done well-ish. But the benefit of it is that it was, there's no chart for it. I made it up completely. I drew the letters by hand and I stitched them with, you know, some of them were pattern stitches. And then, and, like, I did some Romanian couching and I did some, you know, needle weaving. And then a lot of the stitches, I have to say, I just completely made up as I went because like what's going to stitch, you know, up quickly because we only have 50 miles to go. So a lot of it really was driven by, you know, necessity really of how quickly can I get this together? So it was a little challenging, and I could have completely avoided that by doing it way in advance because it's not like they didn't give us plenty of time, which they did. But I did not do that. And so I think it's worth mentioning the way that the challenge goes is Krynex sponsors it, and they give you they send you a bag of threads, and it's the Krynex bag of bits. So for anybody that hasn't seen this, it's a sort of like a, probably about a sandwich bag size, maybe a little bit bigger, of Krynex threads. And it's not spools or anything like that. It's just literally a handful of threads of all different kinds. There's ribbon, there's number 4, there's number 8, there's blending filament, every color, there's short pieces, long pieces. It's whatever you happen to get. So everybody got different pieces. So you have to be able to not only meet the challenge of the design, but you have to be able to make it out of that. So that was also kind of fun. And I liked that, actually. I liked being limited to that because that was one less decision you had to make because you had this bag. And you could add things in, but you had to use what was there to tell the story. So,
right.
You know, it's okay, this is my toolbox. What am I going to use? So, again, it forces you to learn how to – I learned how to do Romanian couching because that was what was going to work for that particular – letter that I was making. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of neat. So if you ever need sort of just random bits of metallic, I highly, you know, it'd be great for Christmas ornaments and things like that, like smalls.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the greatest thing ever. So I have leftovers and I'm going to hold on to them because it's fantastic.
Yep. Well, yeah. And like you said, it eliminates a decision. Actually eliminates several decisions, but it also forces you to use your creativity within confines. And that in itself can be a very fun challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you hit that one out of the park. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
So, yep.
You know what? It makes me laugh every time I see it because it's just so, it's funny to me.
Yep.
It's kind of goofy and that's all I wanted, you know?
Yep. And on top of it, you participated. You know, you
yes.
jumped in, you went into the deep end and went for it, and that's huge in its own right. So, yep, pretty cool. And that, yeah, and then they have a gallery of those, so you'll be able to go and to the website at the school and see that. And they talk about the challenge in Sunday's
mm-hmm.
conversation and what that is and how it works. So. More detail on that. So that was, yeah, that was, I was really, that was fun. That was fun.
Right.
And then I got to ask you, now you got Michael stitching.
Yes.
Yeah. Stitched both days, came back the next day. He didn't find another place in town to go on the second day. He showed up. So the burning question for me is, Is he interested, or was he just doing it because it was something to do while he was in Weaverville?
No, I think it started off as just something to do. And the first day it was just, I don't even know. I think I just gave it to him and I think he was being polite. And, but then I think once he started doing it, it became sort of a challenge because he was struggling to see, which is always the case, right? Because it's 36 count linen and it's a little bit of thread. But now he's got a challenge. Now it's, okay, I have to do this thing that all these ladies are doing and they're ripping through it. And I've gotten 4 stitches in and I'm going to get this done. I'm going to figure it out. So I found a magnifying mirror that I had and he's like, this is terrible. This, I can't understand how you do this with this. And I said, well, that one's terrible. And then the next day, it was, you know, I got him set up a little bit better, a little bit more comfortably. And then he started on a different piece that he actually was doing cross stitch. The first day was just a little, just a stem stitch, really. And he did the first cross stitches. And so I walked him through, okay, this is how you're going to go, you know, go in this direction, do this part, and then go in that direction. And he just went right through it and was done. And I had said at the end, so, you know, what did you think? And he was like, that was kind of fun. I said, would you be interested? Because I think that, because I was trying to sort of get at the idea of what it was that was appealing to him. You know, I said, would you do this again? And he said, yeah, I think I would. It was kind of fun. He's like, but I don't know that I would do exactly this. And I had suggested sort of the kind of pieces that you like, that are more the needlepoint style. Because he was frustrated. You know, his big complaint was the chart is boxes, but the fabric is holes and it doesn't make any sense. And I said, yeah, that is something that you have to get used to, is that the chart shows a box, but what you're really doing is each box really means 4 stitches because you're stitching over 2. So once we got that sort of sorted out, what I suggested that he do was do what I did, which was to pick up a Debbie Rowley piece, although I would suggest something a little bit smaller and simpler.
Yeah, I'll say.
But because I think her instructions are impeccable, and because the way she draws it out, she shows you this is where the thread is coming up out of the hole and this is where it's going down into the hole. So I started showing him those pieces and his interest is piqued. But then, you know, the kinds of things that he likes in needlework are things like map samplers and more scenic type things.
Mm-hmm.
So the bug has caught, but he, you know, he basically said, look, I cannot do this without a light. And I said, okay, well, we'll start you with something else. And he's like, no, I need to finish that piece.
All right.
So I think it's going to take.
Great.
Fantastic. Yeah. I think that was great. I had no expectation that would happen at all. But he seemed to enjoy it. And I think it was just the challenge of it. You know, it was funny, little things that he would say, like, you know, I need a bigger needle. This needle's too small for my big chunky fingers.
Uh-huh.
So, okay, that makes sense. So let's get you, you know, like a big needle that works better for you. And mm-hmm. it really goes to show how your equipment makes for a much more enjoyable experience, because he had a big sort of fat tapestry needle that was something that I had grabbed that I was using on needlepoint. So it's great for needlepoint, but it was terrible for linen.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went over and grabbed some of the tulip needles, maybe like a 25 tulip needle. And I threaded that up and gave that to him. I said, try this. And he's like, oh, that's very different.
Yeah.
So the tools really do make a big difference, I think.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And you were in a place where you could try out things too. That's one of the things about being.
Well, and that just gave me an excuse to purchase them also. Yeah, so there was that. Not gonna lie.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. I hope he keeps it up. That'd be great.
Yeah, I think he likes the history aspect of it.
Oh, so, yeah. Well, that definitely appeals to him. Yes.
That drives it. So he's like, show me something with Tudor roses on it. I want to do a pomegranate, you know, like those sorts of things.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, I think he's going sort of down his own path.
Yeah. All those things are possible.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
all very available. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. Yeah. No, because I thought, wow, this guy's he's going to sit there and stitch that first day of that, man. I give him credit for, you know, going with the flow here. And then I kind of got a sense that he was getting into it that first day. And then when he showed up the second day, I thought, whoa, this is all right. All right.
He's actually doing it. But I think the funniest part was all of the ladies that would come by because we were sitting in the back, right?
Right.
They would all come back sort of one by one and sort of sidle up to where he was and go, what are you doing? It's like, I'm stitching the piece. Really? You're stitching the piece for real? He's like, yeah, I'm stitching the piece. Oh. And then they get all like kind of sassy.
Mm-hmm.
It was very funny.
Yep. Well, I think that's great. Yay. Let's hope he does it. I hope he gets.
I think he will.
It is fun. It's a lot of fun.
Once the weather kind of gets a little worse and we, you know, don't have a ton of yard work to do.
Yeah.
I think we may have to get two good lights for the living room.
They'll be sitting there blinding each other.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I had a good time. I did, you know, I got to find a way to do this because I did four sampler tours with Nicola. Two of them we put up. Esther Benson, which was the sampler that was used in the classes she did. And then MH1656, which is one terrific sampler. I really enjoy doing those tours where you can take a camera and talk with the in this case Nicola, but you know whoever it is, about the sampler and learn about the different motifs and the different stitches and stuff. I really enjoy doing that. I got to find a way to do it with other people who other people who reproduce these things. And you got to be in the room with them is kind of the thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I gotta get more. Like maybe next time I'm out in Phoenix, I'll just there's about four or five designer chart people out there and just sit down and just make videos because it's so much fun to learn. And already many people have said how much they enjoy the tour of the sampler and. Especially with the person who did the charting or stitched the model or whatever it is. Yeah. So,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I just got to get more of these because they're really fun to do.
Mm-hmm. I was also surprised at how many people collect samplers. So not just stitchers, but collect antique samplers. And so they go on Etsy primarily. Evidently, Etsy is the hot spot for sampler collectors. They go on Etsy and purchase old samplers.
Yeah, I didn't realize that many people did that.
No, that's pretty cool, though.
Right, yeah. Well, there's certainly enough of them out there. Holy smokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Endless supply.
Yeah, there was quite the demand. There was a lot of people that did that. And I had always thought that they were somewhat rare, and I think that they are rare for sure. But you can get them. So if this is something that you want to have, they can be had for a price.
Yeah.
But you can have your own, not reproduction, but your actual own original.
Right. Yep. Because a couple, three people at Sassy Jack's bought originals and took them with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, yeah. I was surprised because I thought those just stayed in the store, but I knew they were for sale. But I thought nobody buys those, but yeah, mm-hmm. they do. So, yep. So that was fun. And Weaverville, North Carolina. Now I had no idea what to expect, but what a great little town. If we hadn't had to get home, I think we'd have been happy to stay another day and poke around in the shops, and just see the other art. People around town, that's a little gem out there in the middle of essentially nowhere.
Yeah. And I think in Asheville next door as well.
Oh, that's similar? I didn't explore that
Asheville,
at all.
Asheville, yeah, I think even, perhaps even more so.
Oh. But, yeah, that's that was fun. That's a great mm-hmm. town, yeah, yeah. And the bed and breakfast we stayed in, that was really nice. Enjoyed that. And yeah, good stuff. It was a good trip. Have to get back there. Yeah, and anybody, you know, if you got a chance to get there, it's definitely worth it. That town has a lot to offer. And it was the first night, was it the first night that they had the motorcycle night?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and the whole town was full of motorcycles and they had a band and the whole bit, and everybody, you could tell it was an event that people came out for. And I saw Michael, I think I saw him on a corner just standing there drooling. I think I did see that, yes. So, yeah, so good trip. Good trip. Enjoyed that. Thanks to Kim for the hospitality. And
yes, Sassy yep. Jack's knocked it out of the park. It was it's a great shop to go to.
Yeah, she really, yeah, that's nice. That's a nice shop. And then I didn't get to the quilt shop. Did you get to the quilt shop next door?
No, I didn't. I never wanted did to, either. And I got busy.
I never did either. So, yep, great time in North Carolina. Oh, and then linen. Yes. Kim had a few pieces of linen. And it was fun to look at those and see the differences in you know, one color or what's supposed to be one color and the differences in the dye lots or just in piece to piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was, I have a full yard coming of platinum.
Your platinum?
Yes. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So just yeah, get a yard.
I actually was surprised too, because there is tremendous variation within one color.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and of course people don't have a store. You don't have the opportunity to stand there and compare three or four and say, that's this one, not this one. And,
right.
And once again, the value of that store,
mm-hmm.
really, really important. So, yep. So a good trip. Learned a lot, did a lot, enjoyed it. Got to see the Smoky Mountains for the first time. I learned something there. I did not know because I didn't pay attention because I'd never been there. I thought it was just Smoky Mountains was just haze that hung over the valleys because of condensation. But then when I was seeing these plumes of white smoke or white vapor coming up and then looked up, well, how do those happen? And it's a result of respiration from all that foliage. And it looks like everybody's got campfires all over the place. And
it's yeah.
It was quite a view, yeah. The
it's beautiful.
The drive through the Smokies to get back home was in the day because we drove there in the nighttime. Holy smokes, that was scary. Winding hilly road in pitch black. Oh man, get this over with. But then going back, oh what a treat. We were slowing down and pulling over all over the place just to enjoy the views.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's a real treat. Yep. So that was yeah that was fun. Enjoyed that. Let's see what else we got going here. Oh yeah, we can wrap up. I was getting a kick out of these, some sayings that people had put up. The one that triggered it for me was, I thought there was a spider on the rug, but it was just yarn. It's dead yarn now though. And you can you know you can see how that would happen.
Yep.
A little wad, you know, stomp
oh,
on it quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. So that was my favorite one. And then and then this one too. I'm stitching on 36 count linen for the first time. I think I could handle 40 count if the holes were bigger. Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. Yep. Oh, and then I need to find hobbies that don't include my debit card. Yeah. Yeah. Good luck on that one. Yep.
I like that.
Yeah, that's the trouble with 2 days in a store too. Man, it's hard to just not go around and start filling up a basket, isn't it?
Yeah, you start creating a pile.
Yep.
Especially if you don't have a store local.
Yeah, because I'm a little more used to it. This is like candy heaven for you. All right, I think that's gonna be it, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. So Sunday, we're going to have Lucy Barter and Elise Sperber, the founders of the San Francisco School of Needlework and Design, and encourage you to enjoy our tours that we did of the two samplers with Nicola, the MH1656 and Esther Benson 1738. Those two. It's just fun to go through that and see up close what they have. The MH1, that's the original that we got to look at. And Esther Benson was the model. Oh, no, that's right. With Esther Benson, we got to see the original and the model next to each other. That was a real treat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, be sure and check those out. They're on the website and or on our FlossTube channel. All right, we're done.
Very good.
We'll be back Sunday and then next Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
Take care.